Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Many immigrants find themselves struggling to access services or even gain an education because they cannot understand or read English. More barriers have emerged that make translation services more difficult for these communities. San Antonio is a literacy desert. About 25% of San Antonio residents, 90,000 people, cannot read at a fifth grade level. San Antonio is also home to a majority Latino population, many of them immigrants. A professor at Texas A&M University San Antonio is taking an approach that takes her students outside the classroom to find ways to transform lives through education. They study socioeconomic backgrounds of the city's Latino populations and their experience with language. And she puts her students to work with a nonprofit that offers basic literacy courses, career training, and educational support. Elena Faulis is an assistant professor at A&M San Antonio's Department of Language, Literature, and Arts and is director of Spanish Language Studies. She leads the class Language and Literacy in Latinx Communities. We're also joined by one of her students, Leslie Martinez, an undergraduate student majoring in Spanish. Faulis explains the importance of language to Spanish-speaking communities.
So we talk about how language is part of our identities. It really informs our perspective, but it also is loaded with, unfortunately, stereotypes, right, about who speaks the language and the association that comes with it. One of the things that we've been talking about in the class, Language and Literacy in Latinx Communities, is what does that mean for immigrants, for newcomers as they're learning the language, but also for those communities who are already here and are bilingual. And so one of the things that we are talking about is how the language practices that we have also can impact our educational experiences, which can also have an impact on our upward mobility, our economic futures, right? Whether we are really focusing on becoming fully bilingual for ourselves, for our community, for our professional lives, or really for some of our immigrant communities, upper mobility in their jobs, right? So that they can get a promotion as they're learning, you know, English, or be able to communicate with their kids' school, with the teachers. So really, it's a whole set of things that inform how we language, where, and with whom.
We've done a program in the past of when there is somebody in the family who does not have that sense of ease with the English language, that they end up having to use other family members, and oftentimes younger family members, right, to be their translators. And that pressure that's on those individuals that are sort of forced to play this dual role while also maybe trying to be a student and trying to just get good grades in school.
Leslie here has also been with me last semester, where we looked at the impact of language and health, and how some young bilingual children of Latino families take on the role of interpreter, translators, and sometimes those experiences can be fulfilling, right? Like they're providing an opportunity for communication with the parents and the healthcare provider or the school or whatever, you know, the case might be. But it is also incredibly an experience that could be that of anxiety, right? Or inappropriate for the age, right? Discussing health issues that maybe a child or a young person has no concept of. Really, there's a power dynamic that also happens, right? Where the young person comes into a situation like a doctor's office or the school, and there's a power imbalance where the parent is no longer the one in charge, but the interpreter, right? Which is, in this case, the children. So that is something that we definitely need to think about and talk about. I don't think it's one or the other, right? It's not that we want to say, well, kids should not be interpreting. I think that it could be in addition to a professional interpreter, for example, or language broker, right? Because family members sometimes trust their family members to really engage in conversations or exchange details that are more intimate than an interpreter. It's a difficult line, right, between using family members, especially young kids, as interpreters, and then using professional interpreters.
Well, Leslie, I'm curious as to your interest in this particular topic. Was there something that maybe you experienced in your own life or observed in other people's lives that you took this interest in this topic?
Well, I'm an immigrant. I'm the only person in my family that speak English. So for the longest time, I didn't know that there was people that were studying this, that were focusing on what us as immigrants sometimes feel. So I feel like being able to understand that part, but at the same time, being able to read about it and study about it gives me both perspectives, gives me the best of both sides of both words. I've been in the position that I have to translate for my parents, but I also heard the experience from other parents about their kids translating for them, and also hearing the experience from my classmates, because most of us are bilingual. So at some point, we were the interpreters for our parents. So I feel like being able to participate on both sides gives me a whole perspective. But at the same time, I want to be involved in it. I want to be part of the change, for the future generations. Because, at the end of the day, they're kids. And sometimes they feel this responsibility. They feel like they have to do it, which I understand because I feel the same way. They're my parents. I want to do what I can for them. But at the same time, sometimes we feel like this weight in our shoulders that sometimes we don't even know how to take. And I feel like these programs, studying all of this, give us that tools to say, okay, we have these resources, we can find translators, we have interpreters that we can rely on, but at the same time, we can be present.
Mm-hmm. So what was your experience as an immigrant in learning English and taking this class? Are you seeing a lot of things that have mirrored your own personal experience?
Yes. Every class, it resonates with me. Learning English, I would say that was one of the hardest things for me, and I'm still learning.
I'm still learning, too. It's not an easy language.
No, I consider myself I'm still an ESL student. I always said that. But I think it also comes with stigma, with a lot of, people look at you differently when you share your background, when they hear your accent. Some people will see it as a strength. Oh, that's great. You speak more than one language. But other people would judge it because of that. So I feel like being able to understand more of the power dynamics with language, more of the cultural well. We come from another country, but we are literate in certain areas. Just because our English is not as strong or the standard, people would say, that doesn't mean that we cannot succeed in this country. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's one of my main focuses, being able to share my experience, but also understand that everyone's experience is different and that we can all succeed, but sometimes the language barrier is there.
You're right. And I've read this many times where there will be a child that is coming into the United States very well educated from the country that they're in, but because English is not their primary language, they are put back several mm-hmm. grades, even though they may be the brightest person right. in that class. The language will stigmatize them and set them aside and leave mm-hmm. some really lasting mental scars.
Mm-hmm. Right. I've had conversations with students that have had that experience, but also just, some of the research that we read points at, when we hold a child back in the school system, right? It's sort of the best intention, right? So that they can learn. That's not always the best approach. But what happens too is that there's peers that associate that with not being smart enough, not being able to read and write, which has nothing to do with your abilities. You're just an English learner, right? And so there's different ways that schools deal with that. Some of them, put them in the grade that they were in their home countries, and then they provide support, right, like ESL classes or English classes to support that learning, but they don't necessarily put them back a grade or two, which I think is a better approach. But is inevitable in a country where English is now the official language, right? But when English is the dominant language in this country, anybody else that doesn't speak English or well enough or with an accent is seen as less than. So those attitudes, we have to change those attitudes in these discussions, right? Talking about it, the classes that we take and the way that we hopefully empower others, right? To say, oh, it's okay. Like accents are fine, right? Like we all have accents, or I'm an English language learner. So am I. Like I've been in the country for over 30 years and I'm still learning new words. How do we normalize that, right? Normalize being bilingual or multilingual, normalize having the accents that we have. Like, why would we want to remove that if it's part of also who we are? What makes it difficult is those negative associations that people have about our accents.
Elena Faulis is an assistant professor at Texas A&M University San Antonio's Department of Language, Literature, and Arts. She is director of Spanish Language Studies and leads the class Language and Literacy in Latinx Communities. We're also talking to undergraduate student at A&M San Antonio, Leslie Martinez. When we come back, Leslie Martinez reflects on the gratification she feels helping Spanish speakers earn their GED.
Every day that I'm with them, I feel this feeling of fulfillment, I would say. Not just because I'm there to help them, but at the same time because at the end of the day, I feel like they're my people.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. It's one thing to study the impact of language and literacy on Spanish-speaking populations. It's another to take that knowledge and apply it to the community. Elena Faulis teaches the course Language and Literacy in Latinx Communities at Texas A&M University San Antonio. It's a service learning course that teams with community partners to directly address literacy in San Antonio's Latino communities. The class is partnering with the nonprofit Restore Education. This learning center offers free pathways like English classes, GEDs, and career training to advance opportunities. Faulis is joined by her student, Leslie Martinez, in our conversation. Faulis explains how this academic community partnership works.
In a service learning class, you typically have one or two community partners that you work with that relates to the topic of the class, right? In this case, we're looking at growing up bilingual, biculture, how those experiences both advance sort of educational opportunities or not, depending on the schools, the neighborhood, the family that Latinx people, Latinos grow up in, right? And so we also started looking at the literacy rates in San Antonio, and low literacy levels in San Antonio are very high, about 25%. So in the state, we are the fourth state with the lowest level of literacy. You know, so we're looking at that, and then we're looking at San Antonio, and then we look at where in San Antonio, and it's South Side, right? It's the South Side where we have a higher concentration of low literacy levels. And then some students started looking at where are the libraries? Because there is an association, right, of low literacy rates and the amount of libraries that are in the neighborhood. They looked at the map. There is information. There's some maps that show where all the libraries are here in San Antonio. There's a higher concentration of libraries in central and north San Antonio. We have a dry library desert right in the south side.
It's library desert. It's a medical desert. Mm-hmm. It's desert in many categories, sadly.
Absolutely. It wasn't my plan to like really look at library deserts, but here we are. We found this out. What can we do? There's a lot of things that are sort of in the plan. We kind of want to hopefully do some advocacy about why don't we have more libraries in the South Side. And another thing practical that we can do as a class is to install a free library. So that's one of the things that the class is going to do. But aside from that, we also are partnering with Restore Education, which is a school for adult learners or a program for adult learners who want to either learn English or finish their GED or even start taking like college classes, right? And we're tutors. And that's what it is, right? Being there to partner and giving people access to this educational resources that from one reason or another didn't happen. Not all of the people, the students that are here are immigrants. Some just for one reason or another could not finish, you know, their high school or, but some of them are.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leslie, I want to hear your experience in working with the community. Tell us what you've done if you've been working with this nonprofit that Elena just mentioned. Tell us about what you're doing.
Okay, right now I'm working with the Spanish GED class. That's why I was saying about, like, they come with their literacy levels, like, super high. Well, they have different literacy levels, but sometimes the language is a barrier. And I get to see that they are smart. Like, I feel like I'm taking more than what I'm giving, because every day that I'm with them, I feel this feeling of fulfillment, I would say. Not just because I'm there to help them, but at the same time because I'm, because at the end of the day, I feel like they're my people, that we come from the same community. We have the same values. We have, like, I mean, this is an amazing experience. I want to be an educator. But working with adults, it's a total different experience.
So I'm curious. So you were talking, Elena, about English being the official language. Mm-hmm. And that refers to the languages that all official documentation is right. Printed and published that has to do with the government. And so states now have sort of the option to have other language options for official documents, mm-hmm. which is going to alienate many, many people who right. live in this country, aka immigrants. And so I am wondering if you feel maybe that your work is all that much more important because mm-hmm. you were talking about a literacy, a library desert. All that is because of historical redlining mm-hmm. and so many other governmental restrictions that were put on populations of color. And so now we're seeing a lot of backlash against immigrant communities. We're seeing a stop on many Spanish language translations or other language translations. I'm curious if you, again, feel like that your work is much more important or if you yourself are feeling any outward pressure because of this politicalization of what's mm-hmm. happening right now.
I have all of those feelings in a day, unfortunately, right? Sometimes I'm like, okay, that's fine. Spanish speakers or other, you know, speakers of other languages are still here. And we need to provide access, right? There's a lot of dirty words right now, like equity and inclusion. And if we really want to provide the best health care, for example, and your patient does not speak English or has limited English knowledge, in order to provide the best care, you have to provide the language, right? So I don't necessarily think that those services are going to go away because in certain situations, you can get in a lot of trouble for not having, you know, the interpreter for, you know, a clinical interaction or decisions about somebody's health care. But also in the schools, like if you are going to engage the community, if you are going to engage the parents and they have limited English abilities, then you have to have interpreters, right? And so to me, I think there's also an opportunity, which is there's a lot of grassroots organizations that are there to meet that need as the government is figuring out what they will do and what services they're going to provide or not. Not to say that this is not a difficult moment, right? It is a difficult moment. I talk to my students. Most of my students are wanting to be educators, right, in English or in Spanish. And we have those conversations. How does that look like for you? What are you feeling, right, as a future educator? And many say, oh, I'm determined. Like, this is the moment. Like, this is why I'm doing this, right? Because as educators, we are also the people that families come to for resources, right? La maestra. And so we need to understand what's going on in our city and how we can support, you know, not only the student in our class, but the family for the good of the student as well, right?
Well, Leslie, you're nodding your head this whole time that Elena is talking about future educators, and that is you. So how do you see all of what's unfolding in front of you right now?
As a future educator, I feel like we are there to teach the students and all of that, but at the same time, we are there to advocate, to be protectors for our students, and that is something that I have, like, come to think about since like the first class with Professor Fowles about health and equity. Yeah, I will be an educator, but I know that parents will come to me asking me for, to translate something because I'm going to be a Spanish teacher. So I feel like we have that obligation with the community, with the students, not just because I'm an immigrant. I have that obligation, or I feel that I need to give back to my community, but also for the future of my students. Like, I mean, I will be able to inform them, like, okay, these are your rights. This is what you can and what you can do. So that way they can be that bridge between me and their parents. And if their parents need me, I will be open to do that. Because to me, now that I've been at Restore Education, I've been observing at schools, once I get to know your name, now you're part of my family.
I want to say, too, that the first day that the representative from Restore Education, Carrie, came in, and she's one of the founders. It was right when the executive order, well, there's a lot of executive orders, that, you know, one that targeted undocumented immigrants. She said one of the things that they saw right away is fear. Like, so right after that happened, students were like, hey, can we have some more virtual options? Because there is a clear fear, right? We don't know the immigration status of our students, and it really doesn't make a difference for us, right? We're there to, like, help them with their English, with their GED. But like Leslie mentioned, right, the minute we speak, right, if we have an accent that is not a native English accent, or if they don't know English, right, you're immediately a target, whether you're a permanent resident, a citizen, or not, right? Like, you stand out as somebody that doesn't belong. And we also knew of other organizations we were trying to work with that had lost their federal funding. Interfaith Welcoming Coalition, we were going to work with them, and then their funding, you know, got cut, and so they had so many limitations. So we know that this administration is making people fear about who they are, how they speak, where they are. But I'm also so hopeful and thankful for the community organizations that keep on doing the work. They keep on doing the work because people are here, and we are here, you know, it's part of their mission, right, to help, to bring access, resources, to come alongside communities that are often marginalized, targeted. We are, as a class, I think we're happy to be able to come along with them and be part of that change, even if for just a semester. I know some students are like, oh, I'm going to continue to work on it. And that's what I want to hear as a professor. Yes, please keep on doing that.
There is a case that the Supreme Court decided many years ago that gave students who are suspected of being in the U.S. without documentation, that anybody can get an education, a public school education. Yeah. And now there are efforts in the courts to eventually see that case overturned. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering about either of your views as to how that might impact immigrant students who are taking classes here. It seems like, again, it would be another big, huge step backwards in the education of young people in this country.
I'm really hoping that that is not the case, that that does not happen because of, you know, education equity, first of all, right? Everybody should have access to education, quality education. So I'm really hoping that that doesn't happen. I think here, perhaps, if it does happen, we're going to be looking into those private schools, right? What are they going to do to meet the needs of children that are in our community? What are nonprofit organizations going to do to meet those needs, right? What is the university, right? Like, how do we come along and help meet those needs? A lot of private institutions are doing some of this work, right? In states that either don't offer tuition for undocumented students, they often meet the need of undocumented students because there are private institutions that have less limitations on what they can offer or who they can allow into their university or school. So I'm thinking if it happens, this would be the work that private schools need to be ready for. And then just grassroots. I mean, there's a lot of grassroots efforts happening in our own community. And so, I mean, even future educators, right? What do we do? Like, what do we do to meet this need that we might see?
Any thoughts on that, Leslie?
I don't know. Just by hearing that, it broke my heart. Think about it. I understand that politics plays a huge role in our lives, but like it's like gambling on kids' education, on the future of education. Because as Professor said, they deserve equity and like the best education possible. And most of the times, that's why they immigrate to this country, to mm-hmm. receive a good education. As someone that comes from another country, even public education here, I understand that a lot of people have like their comments about it. So taking away the opportunity for this kid to be educated, that's something that, I don't know, it's inimitable. Because, yep. I mean, we're talking about future adults. Like, I mean, why we are taking away these resources for them? And yeah, we're going to have to rely a lot on private education. We're going to have to speak up.
Yeah, yes. I just think about, I mean, all the things that immigrants bring to our community, right? Because we tend to talk about the cost of immigrants or undocumented immigrants or, you know, so on. And we never talk about the wealth of cultural exchange, of information that they bring with them and that we get to see that, right? Like, think about how the world is coming to your classroom and you get to benefit, right? To learn from different nationalities, different peoples, different ways of being without leaving the U.S. But we tend to focus on sort of the negative. And I think, can we really talk about all the things that we benefit from by having immigrants in our communities, in our classrooms, in our states, in our cities, right? What is our part in making sure that they also get to realize their full potential so that they can give back, right? They can contribute to our community. And most people that migrate, especially to a place like the U.S., including myself, we don't do it just for fun. You know what I mean? Like, every migration is an experience of trauma. So coming to the U.S., even if it's under the best conditions, right, going to school, or you're leaving your culture, you're leaving the comfort of your language, right? I often say, well, I never said so much that I was Mexican until I came to the U.S. So the fact that we're here, it's already a sign of our interest to make, not only to have a better life, but to dig or grow roots, right, in our communities and where we are, and then help others, like Leslie said, right, and just welcoming and like setting roots. But if you are always cutting resources or excluding this community, how could they ever be part of it, right? Instead of thinking about the cost, let's think about what positive things they bring to our community.
Dr. Elena Faulis is an assistant professor at Texas A&M University San Antonio's Department of Language, Literature, and Arts. She's director of Spanish Language Studies and leads the class Language and Literacy in Latinx Communities. We also spoke with undergraduate student at A&M San Antonio, Leslie Martinez. Martinez sees herself in a high school classroom teaching Spanish after graduation and engaging in the community. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marianne Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Chiranga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.